Shabbat shalom. यस्य
यस्य
ओहुम
ओहुम
किंगया
अद्वरे
अद्वरे इन हिज डिफरेंट सैक्रिफाइसेस
इन हिज डिफरेंट सैक्रिफाइसेस
पर अद्वरे
भगवान
अद्वरे पर अद्वरे इन हिज डिफरेंट सैक्रिफाइसेस because I just want you to remember the word sacrifice. There is the theme there, yeah? In his different sacrifices.
Bhagavan,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Atma, the Supreme Enjoyer of all sacrifices.
The Supreme Enjoyer of all sacrifices.
What's Advare?
Sacrifices.
Sacrifices. What's Advare? Atma?
The
Enjoyer. The Enjoyer. Simple. So Advare is the sacrifices. Advare Atma is the enjoyer of all sacrifices. So we have got two things now here. Sacrifice and the enjoyer of two sacrifices. Let's continue. Yajna Purusha. The superior of all sacrifices are Yajna Purusha. Maghoni. Venting
Indra.
Madhyati.
Intoxicated.
Guru.
Greatly.
Somapite. Drinking the intoxicant called Soma.
Drinking the
intoxicant called
Soma.
What has happened to him? He has drunk the intoxicant called Soma and he has got intoxicated. Okay, so far we know that. Shraddha. By devotion. Vishuddha.
Vishuddha.
Purified.
Purified.
So when there is Shraddha, there is Vishuddha. And when there is devotion, there is purification. Achala.
Achala.
And steady.
And steady.
Bhakti yoga.
Bhakti yoga.
By devotional service.
By devotional service.
Samarpita.
Samarpita.
Offer.
Offer.
Ijaya.
Ijaya.
Of worshipping.
Of worshipping.
Padam.
Padam.
The result.
The result.
Ajahara.
Ajahara.
Accepted personally.
Accepted personally.
Okay, let's try to connect all that together. Thanks, Sushila. Prabhupada, translation of Srila Prabhupada. In Maharaja's sacrifice, which was the Advare, in Maharaja's sacrifices, there were great supply of intoxicant known as Soma. King Indra used to come and become intoxicated by drinking large quantities of the Soma Rasa. Also, the personality of Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the Yajna Purusha, which is the Advara Atma Yoga. Lord Vishnu has also come and also came and personally accepted all the sacrifices offered unto him with pure and firm devotion in the sacrificial arena. So what is happening before you build the Pope? Maharaj Jaya is doing sacrifices, and in that Indra has come and taken all the Soma Rasa and become intoxicated. Lord Vishnu has also come and taken all the other sacrifices because he was offered in the sacrifice with love and devotion by King Pope. Maharaj Jaya was so perfect that he satisfied all the demigods headed by King Indra, because we saw Indra in the translation. Satisfied all the demigods who were headed by the heavenly King Indra. Lord Vishnu himself also basically came to the sacrificial arena to accept the offerings. Although Maharaj Jaya did not want them, he received all the blessings of the demigods and the Supreme Lord himself. So let's just break that down before we go into further discussion. So what is happening? Because this is such a short over. To be honest, I didn't even know what to say because Prabhupada has not given enough in this over, you know, so I have to branch out to speak something for half an hour. But what I saw here, the one thing that I picked up is that Maharaj Gaya is doing sacrifice. And two personalities that are mentioned have come to the sacrifice are the demigods and Lord Vishnu himself. And both of them have accepted the offering. Indra accepted the Soma Rasa and Lord Vishnu accepted the other offerings. And in return, what is happening? So that was the other side of Srila Prabhupada. Although Maharaj Gaya did not want them, he received all the blessings from Indra as well as Lord Vishnu. So what is happening? The sacrifice is in the middle. On one side is King Gaya, on the other side, let's say on the upper side, is Indra and the other demigods and Lord Vishnu. So the offering is coming into the sacrifice. They have accepted the sacrificial offering. In return, they are giving the blessings back to Gaya. Yeah? So that part is in there. One thing that came to my mind, which took me a while to get the answer to, is that it says, Prabhupada says here, although Maharaj did not want them, he received all the blessings from the demigods and Lord Vishnu. So what I was not catching is that why would Maharaj Gaya not want them? Because when you do the sacrifice, there is a purpose. And in return, the blessings are flowing, pouring on Maharaj Gaya, but he does not want them. So that was a little intriguing, and I speak about that account in the temple of us, previous and subsequent purpose. And so we talk about that. Om Yanti Vidandhasya Yananjana Sarakaya Chakshur Vimitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruvena Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaurvani Prachane Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Sarakaya Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivashadi Gauravakarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare
Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. In Maharaja's various sacrifices there were great supply of intoxicant known as song. King Indra used to come and become intoxicated by drinking large quantities of Somrasa. Also, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the Yajna Purusha, also came and personally accepted all the sacrifices offered unto him with pure and plain devotion in the sacrificial arena. So, what is happening? Just to bring the context in again, we are doing the glories of Maharaj Gaya. Now, up in chapter 14, when we saw a long history of King Bharat, eventually not going back to Godhead, and that concluded. So then the next is the subsequent descendants of King Priyavrata are now inherited by in the Bhagavad. So Maharaj Bharat pastime is, we have concluded for now, we are in the new pastime. Further descendants of King Priyavrata. And the one that we pick up is Gaya. Although actually in the beginning of the chapter there were many other questions that this will be mentioned, but now Sudha Goswami has zoomed into Maharaj Gaya because he was a good one, he was an exalted devotee. So we like talking about good devotees. So what the chapter opens with about Maharaj Gaya is that he talks about various things such as his good qualities, such as his good devotion, and about him being a great exemplary saintly ruler. Good qualities, what he had, not what his disposition was. He was a great devotee, what he was doing, and then being a good ruler as well, good king as well, looking after his kingdom, supplying them the necessities to become them, to make them gradually become Krishna consciousness. So what then happens in the next, in the last verse, verse 11, and then today we are doing verse 12. In these two verses, it's almost kind of, you read 11 and 12 together. So 11 and 12 is what is happening, is that Sukhya Goswami is mentioning that King Gaya was doing sacrifice. And in doing the sacrifice, he was pleasing everybody. So I'll quickly read 11 so you can get the theory. 11 is easy, just follow me. Yeah? Also 11. Although King Gaya had no personal desire, so remember Vishnu, Lord Vishnu and Indra were giving him blessings, he did not want them. Why? Because although King Gaya had no personal desire, we get the solution immediately. Yeah? Although King Gaya had no personal desire for sense gratification, all his desires were fulfilled by Delhi by virtue of the governments of Delhi rituals. All the kings with whom Maharaj Gaya had to fight were forced to fight on religious principles. They were very satisfied with his fighting and they would present all kinds of gifts to him. So first satisfaction was that Gaya was satisfying the Kshatriyas. He was fighting, although he was fighting against them, the Kshatriyas were pleased with Gaya because he was fighting on religious principles. So point number one, not point. Personally, Nubhavana Rajasthati is satisfied by King Gaya because of his religious fighting. Next one. Similarly, all the Brahmanas, from Kshatriya to Brahmanas, All the Brahmanas in his kingdom were very satisfied with King Gaya's munificent charities. How are the Brahmanas satisfied? With Gaya's charities. Because that's the duty of a Kshatriya. King is a king to give it to the Brahmanas in charities. So he satisfied with the charities. Consequently, the Brahmanas contributed the sixth of their pious activities for King Gaya's benefits in the next life. Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavad that King Gaya went ahead and satisfied the Vaishyas with his affectionate deeds. And the Sudras with his anointed wisdom, with his charity of food again. So Kshatriya satisfied with religious fighting, Brahmanas satisfied with charity, Vaishya satisfied with affectionate dealings, and Sudra satisfied with charities again. Then in this small, we saw some further satisfaction, summarizing together. King Indra got satisfied with the Somas, the intoxicant, and Lord Vishnu got satisfied with all the other sacrifices that were offered in devotion. So this is what is happening here. So, and then Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavad that there is sacrifice and there are blessings. There is five sacrifices going on in between, there are blessings, and this King Gaya doesn't want it. So let's just talk about that a little bit, about sacrifice as well as about the reciprocal from reciprocation from the Lord in terms of the blessings, and why didn't Gaya want it. So, let's talk about sacrifices for some time, part A, and part B we talk about the blessing, part A, sacrifice. Now, when we talk about sacrifices in the Vedic scriptures, is it always literal or could it also be metaphorical? Is it always literal or it could also be metaphorical? We know that of course it is literal, it is metaphorical or not, we'll come to that, but let's discuss about the literal part. We know actually at the moment King Gaya is literally doing a fire sacrifice. Now, there is moon and there is fire and there is the offerings, the oblations in over. And then what happens in the very tense, you know, when we do fire sacrifices, the fire becomes the conduit through which the offerings, the oblations that we make in the fire gets transported to the higher beings, the demigods and eventually the Lord Vishnu, Bhaktaram and Sarvaloka Maheshwara. So the fire becomes a conduit, the Amrita becomes a conduit for the transportation between what we are offering to what they are receiving. So that's literally. Now, Prabhupada tells us that in Kaliga, they are not competent people to do fire sacrifices. The competency level required to do fire sacrifices is not there anymore. The job role is there, but the job description doesn't fit a person that can do that, apart from some of us that may be missed on, you know, people or proper Brahmins who can do it. But generally speaking, there is nobody there who is apt to do the fire sacrifice for two reasons. Actually, it's not only that they are not competent people, there is also no competent ingredient to perform something. Ingredients are not there, as well as the competent Brahmana who can do the intonation properly of the various chants is also missing. So we have got problem A and problem B, ingredient as well as the perform. So those two are missing. So what does then sacrifice mean to us? Because we can't do fire sacrifice on a generally speaking terms. What does it mean? Then what we go deeper into the literal meaning and take out the metaphorical meaning out of it. What is the metaphorical essence of a fire sacrifice? So the essence of a sacrifice is what? You offer something dear to someone dear. Offering means what is dear to you. You give it to somebody else who is also dear to you. Because we generally don't give gifts and charities to those who don't know we are not connected to you. Of course we can, but generally speaking. So offering here in the fire offering, what was happening when it was literally happening, it was offering that something is very dear to us, our possessions, whether it be ghee or, you know, or a cow or a house. The king would give the whole kingdom to the Brahmins. The kingdom was very dear to the king, but he will still give it to the Brahmana in charity. We generally part with our money, not all with our time. Time is probably more valuable than money in Kaliga. So we give in charity our time, we give in charity our money, we give in charity, you know, whatever, prasadam, something like that. So the essence is to give something dear to somebody dear, and that's what Maharaj Gaya is doing. He is offering his possessions in the kingdom to Lord Vishnu, to the true, coming through Indra right there. So, that for me, you know, I had this little confusion in my mind when I was reading Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, during my earlier days. Because in chapter 4, if you look at it, if you look at it, the part where Krishna talks about various kinds of sacrifices, in most of the sacrifices that he mentioned, and this is around verse 15 to 25, somewhere, or maybe 20 to 30, a lot of various types of sacrifices that he mentions as a means of liberation, sacrifices as means of liberation, you think of it, there is no fire involved. Sacrifices such as, he says, you know, giving charity is a sacrifice, is a means of liberation. Even the scriptural study is a means of, is a way of sacrifice for the means of liberation. Household life, you control your senses and give oblation of the sense object in the fire of sacrifice, the metaphysical fire. Pick this up, yeah, if you can. For the household life, the offering is the sense object in the metaphysical fire of sacrifice. So that there is no sense gratification. That is his sacrifice as a means of liberation. My goodness, there is no fire here at all. No, this is all the Krishna, what he does, he literally broadens the essence of sacrifice to something much more than just the fire. So what does it mean for us to summarize that? Sacrifice is not necessarily only lighting the fire without, it is also about lighting the fire within. When we light the fire within, metaphorically speaking, what it does, it burns away the anartha. Just as the external fire will burn away the oblation and then it is transported to the higher beings, the internal fire will burn away the anartha and then Krishna will expose himself to us or reveal himself to us. No? So that's the broader meaning of all the sacrifices in chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita. So what does then the literal and the metaphorical sacrifice, what does it do? It gradually purifies the performer and brings him to the point of pure bhakti. Gradual elevation from samya. So, in the modern times, we do many types of sacrifices. We do whatever Krishna has mentioned, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, of course, our sacrifices, the Sankirtan, and the idea. Then there is no fire. In the chanting, there is no fire, but there is a sacrifice. So, what are we actually sacrificing in chanting? Which is what Prabhupada has recommended for us. That's the Sankirtan Yajna, what is chanting, that's the Yuva Dharma. So, what are we actually sacrificing there? What we are sacrificing, so remember what was sacrifice? Sacrifice is the offering of something dear to us to somebody who is dear to us. So, what happens in chanting? Is that we are sacrificing something that is most dear to us. Now we are not talking about money, we are not talking about our time, we are not talking about our house, we are not talking about our intelligence, we are not talking about our wife, our husband, our children. Something that is even more dear to us than all of them. In the Bhagavatam, in Canto 3, Prabhupada explains it, that very interesting, I will come back to this, let me just like this. He explains there, what is that we love the most? Whom do you love the most? Was the question. And Prabhupada gives me brilliant answer. He says, whom do we love the most? I'm sure you're also thinking, yeah? Prabhupada explains that actually we love ourselves the most. The person that we love the most is ourselves. And because we love ourselves the most, everything that is connected to us, we start loving them. My wife, my husband, my child, my father, my house, my thing. They are connected to me, so I love them. Those things that are not connected to me, I don't love them. So there is a material love, you know, in terms of whom we love. And the person that we should love most is Krishna. But actually speaking, if we love ourselves the most, we are indirectly loving Krishna. How? Because who are we? Mamey himself, Jivaluti, Jivaluti, we are part and parcel of Krishna. So if we can at least love ourselves, then we are already on the route of loving Krishna, or on the path of loving Krishna, because we are Krishna's part. We are fragments of Krishna. So loving ourselves is not actually that bad, provided we love ourselves on the soul platform rather than on the bodily platform. If we love ourselves on the soul platform, we are there. Now we are in the right direction. That's what we are supposed to do. No? And then we should the love of Krishna will be. So, what was I saying? Yes, so chanting. So chanting is a sacrifice where we are offering something that is most dear to us to somebody who is most dear to us. Okay, somebody who is most dear to us, philosophically speaking, which we are trying to cultivate, is Krishna. So that part is easy to understand. He is our beloved. We are trying to open him something. So what is that we are offering him? The metaphorical fire of chanting. What are we offering? We are offering our consciousness. Consciousness is something that is most dear to us, because that is our being, that is our awareness. So Prabhupada educates us to offer our whole consciousness to Krishna. Or in layman terms, we can say Prabhupada teaches us to explain, to offer ourselves to Krishna. It's no longer offering of our body or offering of our house and they have a tradition. Not about anything else. Offer our whole existence to Krishna. That is what Bhakti Yoga does. We offer ourselves to Krishna. Now, that raises a question. What does it actually mean to offer our whole self to Krishna? Does it mean that we sacrifice our life, or we live a life of sacrifice? Follow me. Okay. Does it mean that we sacrifice our life for Krishna, or we live a life of sacrifice for Krishna? They are two different things. And I'll bring an example from the Ramayana to demonstrate my, to explain my point. Yeah. Because there is this pastime in the Ramayana which is very dear to me. It's this particular pastime that brought me closer and closer to Krishna consciousness, to his consciousness. I was reading all these verses coming from a Hindu background of demigod worship, just wanting everything from the demigods. This particular pastime, which on the face of it looks like, the devotee was doing everything right, but there was a technical defect in his thinking process, which got corrected, and that just kind of, hammered what Prabhupada is not trying to explain to us in terms of how devotees should offer themselves to the Lord. Yeah? So this pastime, I pick up from the time, when Maharaj, our Lord Ram, was supposed to be coronated as the king of Ayodhya. He's a supreme personality of God, he was allowed to be coronated. The problem that he, because Bhagavan doesn't face any problem, but in his lila, the situation that he faced was something that was diametrically opposite the evening before. From the jubilation of being coronated as the king of Ayodhya, what he got told is to get out of the house. From being the prime minister of the property, he is being told to get out of his house the night before. Now this is diametrically opposite, because what he could have also been told is to say, by the way, my lord, not my lord, because at that time they didn't take him as lord, by the way, Ram, you will not be the king of Ayodhya anymore, but you can live here as a civilian. So there is at least one level of problem could have been possibly tolerable by Lord Ram to say, that you don't be the king, but live here as a civilian. Now to be told that you will not be a king here, you cannot live here as a civilian either, but get out of here and go and live in the jungle, is a diametrically opposite mood now, from that mood to this mood. You know what I mean? And this pastime was very sweet to me. And then actually, and I've spoken about this pastime many times in different venues, and the Lord gave me, I'll share something personal with you for 2 minutes, for 1 minute, yeah. The Lord gave me something very, the sweet Lord Krishna gave me the biggest foothold of this in my own life through my own realizations this week only. Yeah. And I'll share with you a little story that I'm still sharing with you. On this Monday, 4 days ago, it was my birthday. And you know what the mood is. Of course, as devotees, we don't get over excited because we know one more year, one closer. We are rising and setting of the stars. We are closer to saying goodbye and happy birthday. We know that. But somehow the other, because it's your birthday, devotees come, we have prasadam together, everybody says, wish you Hare Krishna, you say thank you very much, I'm very humble, I'm wishing you. Please come and pray for me, being a good person. All the drama that we do, But inside we feel a little bit happy because we know that we are going to be friends who at least remember our birthdays, if at that level, right? So like it's a rasa in devotion series, to Mangala, because of course then you know what you mean. what I mean, right? That's the mood that we want to develop. That we want to develop, that's the mood that we are kind of in. And then what happened on that day, a sadness, I had the news that somebody very dear to me in Fiji left her body. She is my sister-in-law, a very dear sister-in-law. That's why in Hindi we say Mahatma, in sister-in-law we say Bhabi, and in literally we say Bhabi Ma, and Ma means mother. So, you know, so then I won't go much into that, but just note the difference in the mood now. You know, you wake up in the morning and 3 o'clock the phone rings, you say, safety, this has happened. It's like diametrically opposite mood now. And to compound that problem throughout the day, I'm receiving two kinds of calls and two kinds of messages continuously. Because when it's your birthday, you know you get so many messages, you know, and then your Facebook and WhatsApp and all that messages come. You say, you know, happy birthday, you must be celebrating and blah, 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 blah. And another set of messages are coming, you say, I'm sorry for you, I'm very weak for you, no condolences and all those things. It's like two different moods and I was just packed into it. No? Of course, by default, you go into the bereavement mood because that's just nature, huh? And you try to ignore all the birthday messages. And when people call you and they wish you, it's like, can you stop? You know, they have to tell you that I'm going through some meditation period. Then I was thinking, my goodness, it's the pastime in the Ramayana that I love the most, and I'm spoken about it, that Lord Ram, from being coronated as the king, has been sent to get out and go in the forest. It's like, Krishna, you have taught me what actually it means. You've given me the realization to say, on one hand you want to get there, on the other hand there is a bereavement. And this is the time of the world, the top class situation, phenomenon. So I got that thing, you know. Thanks to Krishna. So, coming back to what I was saying, let me just see what I was trying to say.
Sacrifice.
I was trying to say that whether we sacrifice our life or live a life of sacrifice. So what happens when Maharaja, when Lord Ram got told to leave Ayodhya and go to the forest, you know, and live there for almost 14 years and etc. etc. No. He was told to live there for 14 years, he almost lived there for 14 years, and back end he had to go to Lanka and all that thing that we know. So then when Bharat, whom his mother wanted to be the king, comes back to Ayodhya from wherever he had gone, I think he had gone to his wife's residence or his own mother's place. So he had gone to his mother's house, so he comes back and then he knows that his mother has done all this conspiracy to get to make Lord Ram go away from Ayodhya so he can be coronated as the king. No, as a nepotism. He doesn't like all that. No, of course we know that past time. He doesn't like all that. So then what he does, he packs up his bag and says to go help with this kingdom. I don't want this kingdom, I want Ram. No? So I'm going to go to the forest and get him back because this is his. What is somebody else's should never be ours. Vishwakarnisha tells us, know your quota. So he knows that this is Lord's son, because Lord's property, he doesn't want it. So he goes to the forest and then that's zooming there. So what happens in the forest? Now you see the mood of Bharat. He is genuinely, sincerely, devotionally giving away the kingdom to Lord Ram. There is no, what do you call it, ultra motive, no hidden agenda at all. Sincerely, as a devotee of Lord Ram, trying to give it to Lord Ram. But, which seems strange to us, but on the other hand, Lord Ram does not want it. Because he is adamant that he is going to follow the vows of his father, the vows that he has made to his father, that for 14 years he will live in the forest and Bharat will be the king. So that kind of contradicted initially, you know, when I was reading Ramayana and many philosophy from Prabhupada's books, you said it doesn't make sense. Because Bharat is offering to Lord Ram something very devotionally, very sincerely, genuinely, with all the love, with tears in the eyes, he's begging Lord Ram, take this kingdom, please come back. But Lord Ram is not budging at all. He's saying, no, Bharat, you're making a mistake here. This is yours because our father has given it to you and our father has told us that I must stay in the forest. But where has gone the philosophy of that if you offer something with love to Krishna, he will accept it. But Ram is not accepting it. So they contradicted the philosophy for some time. It doesn't matter, right? But it contradicted for me for some time and we resolved it for some time. Then what happens? Janu Maharaj gets cold on the occasion, it's a meal Gita. You see, I mean, there's a sweet transcendental tension coming on between the yogi and the Lord, between the two brothers. So what Janaka, this is interesting. So I'm coming to the sacrifice now. The life of sacrifice versus the sacrifice of life. What Janaka tells Maharaj Bharat to say that you, let me get the statement correct. You are offering something that is dear to you to Ram. That is the right part. That's what sacrifice is, to offer something dear to somebody dear. So he's offering me something that's dear to him, the whole kingdom, to Lord Ram. Then he says, in response to what Bharat says, pick up the first statement only. Now I'm offering something that is mine at the moment, the kingdom, to Lord Ram, because that is actually my default his. And then he says, not just the kingdom, I'm happy to offer my whole life to him. I'm happy to sacrifice my life at the feet of Lord Ram. I'm happy to die for Ram right now, right here. I'm happy to give up my body. I'm literally, not metaphorically now, I'm literally happy to give up my body for the pleasure of Lord Ram. So he was willing to sacrifice his life. But what Janak told him is that sometimes, beautiful line, huh? Just get this if you can. Sometimes sacrificing your life is easy, but living a life of sacrifice is not easy. I'm not supposed to use Hindi, but I still will say it because it just brings out the meaning, and I'll translate the meaning in Hindi. अपने प्रेमी के लिए कभी-कभी जीना कठिन होता है, मरना सरल होता है. To die for your beloved sometimes is easier than to live for your beloved. And when is it difficult to live for the beloved? When the beloved is not there with you, when there is separation. If Lord Ram is in Ayodhya, to live for Lord Ram for Bharat is very easy because there is no Vikrama. But when Lord Ram is not there and he is in Chitrakoot, then to live for Lord Ram seems more difficult than to die for Ram from Bharat's point of view. So he says, I'm ready to sacrifice my life rather than living a life of sacrifice. And I'm saying that there is more difficult when the beloved is not in your presence, because that separation kills you. That separation kills you every single minute. Then, I was saying, you know, the philosophy seems to be contradictory. Bharat is offering him something with love, but Ram is not accepting it. Then Janak tells Bharat the second thing. The first thing was that living is sometimes harder than dying. So don't die, live for Lord Ram. And this is when he reconciles the philosophy. Beautiful. Just so beautiful our scriptures are. Janak says to Bharat that ask Lord Ram what will please him rather than what you want to please him with. Don't please Ram with what you think will please him. Please him with what he wants to be pleased with. So if he doesn't want the kingdom, although you are offering with love, there is no way to please him. But if you please him what he wants, then he will be pleased. And that is beautiful. So living a life of sacrifice. So what Ram then tells Bharat is to say that because once his mood gets corrected, then I'm going to please Lord Ram what he wants. Bharat goes to the lotus feet of Lord Ram and asks him and begs him to say that I have been polluted with my mindset of trying to force onto you something that I think is good for you. I never sat back and said for me that what you will be pleased with, my dear Lord. Now you tell me what should I do. That is the mood of Sharanagati. That is what Prabhupada has taught us. To ask Krishna, oh my dear Lord, how can I please you? How can I please you? Not how I want to please you, in my own ways. How can I please you? There's a big difference. And then Ram tells Bharat to say, now that your mood is corrected, that your mood is corrected, Lord picks up that his mood is corrected, says that, now that you have come to offer me the kingdom, I will accept it. But I also want you to go and live there for 14 years until I finish of this business, and then I'll come back and accept it and own it forever. But for now, you just manage it on my behalf as a caretaker. Just manage it on my behalf as a caretaker. So Bharat has to live 14 years life of sacrifice for Lord Ram, missing him so much. All everything that is dear to him in the kingdom is continuously offering it to Lord Ram. So as devotees, what do? Now we live a life of sacrifice. We sacrifice our senses. We sacrifice the religious. We sacrifice our material senses. We sacrifice those things that give us material sense of enjoyments into the fire of Sankirtana Yajna. We sacrifice our time into the fire of Sankirtana Yajna. We sacrifice literally our food, offer it to Krishna, and then take the blessings that come out of his throat. Because blessing is prasad, yeah? Blessing is prasad. So we take that as our nourishment food. So everything, therefore, everything that we do, we sacrifice to the Lord. Including at the utmost, our whole consciousness, our whole being, we sacrifice to Krishna. And then what happens when we sacrifice like this? Then in return, what happens? What did Maharaj Jaya got? He got one more blessings. So then Krishna gives us blessings. But then again, something that was contradictory. That initially was contradictory to me, which I said at the beginning as well. That Maharaj Jaya is receiving blessings from Indra as well as Lord Vishnu, although he did not want it. Now that seems strange to me, because when we do offerings, whether it's Sankirtan Yajna or any metaphorical or ritual Yajna, then if the blessings come, we are told to count our blessings. There's a modern technology which says count your blessings. But here Maharaj is saying, I don't want the blessings, what we speak of counting the blessings. So there's two levels of things. He doesn't want the blessings, and we are told to count the blessings from the material point of view. So how do we reconcile all that? And then I have to again, peruse Prabhupada's focus to understand the point. So the way I understand is, firstly, counting the blessings is good, because when we count our blessings, material blessings, it enriches us. It makes us aware that we should be at least grateful and be grateful for the things that we already have, rather than lamenting about those that we don't have. It enriches us. Be satisfied with what the Lord has given us. Now, especially during the modern pandemic times, this brings to light even further. Because we may be, what's the word? Familiarity brings contact. So we are just so familiar with our loved ones, we are just so familiar with our possessions, our house, our car, and everything else, our money, that we just take it for granted. That it's there. It's just a utility that we take it for granted. But when we don't have it, then we realize, oh my God, I should be grateful for it. That's when we should count our blessings as they exist, so that we can feel more enriched. And we know what happened in India recently during the pandemic height, what happened that they were even crying for oxygen. Now how many of us count our blessings that we have got oxygen to breathe? It's like we are almost like ungrateful to it, because it's like there. Now Krishna is giving us physical things like our house, our money, our food and whatever. But he's also supplying us the sunlight and the moonlight and the air and the oxygen to breathe. But we don't count those blessings. But when it is not there, then it's bombarded of all TV screens, that there is no oxygen, there is no oxygen in India. So count our blessings. But there is a problem again. In counting our blessings from a material point of view, what can happen is, in due course of time, we will forget those blessings. Correct? If anything, we have to remind ourselves to count the blessings. So then instead we will forget those blessings in due course of time. So then as devotees, we take counting our blessings to another level. And what is that another level? We don't only count our blessings, but we collect our blessings to the person who gives us the blessings. We don't only count the blessings, we connect our blessings to the person who gives us the blessings. Once we understand that that person is Krishna who is giving us all these blessings, then we will never forget the blessings. And even if we forget to count our blessings, and the blessings can come in the form of different presents that Krishna sends us, different gifts. So even if we forget the presence that Krishna sends us, we will not forget the presence of Krishna. We may forget the blessings, But we will not forget the person who is blessing us. We may forget the presence, but we will not forget the presence of Krishna in our heart. So devotees take this to another level. Now, as we elevate more, as we elevate in Krishna consciousness even more, we take this counting our blessings to yet another level. This is so beautiful, all these Vedic vibes. We count our blessings, we connect our blessings to Krishna, He gives us the blessings, and when that happens, we become a medium of distributing Krishna's blessings to the others. So wherever we go, because we have put that charisma of looking like a devotee, Gatila, Bhogi, Buddha, you know, the nice scriptures, nice prasadam, nice books, dancing, singing, happy, whole families, you know, that persona which people don't, which people are hunger for because they are looking for love, we become mediums to bless others. Of course, we don't go around and say, I bless you, I bless you, I bless you. Then we don't do. Even when devotees ask for blessings, we'll say, we pray that Prabhupada will bless you. Krishna will bless you. Now, we feel humble not to think that we are eligible to bless others. But again, through our character and our personality, we become medium of blessing others. Nimitta matram bhava sabhyasachi. Krishna tells us that we can become instruments of distributing His blessings to others. So, remember, three things are happening. Blessings, counting our blessings, connecting it to Krishna, and then becoming a medium to bless others. When this happens, then it is joyful. Then, last question. Why did Maharaj Gaya not want the blessings? Remember? It said in the translation, in the previous verse as well, and this purport as well, that Maharaj Gaya didn't want the blessings. Because what's wrong with the blessings? It is good. It enriches us. It connects us to Krishna. And then it empowers us to give and bless others. So why didn't he want it? And Prabhupada then explains, that what the demigods would potentially be giving him, including the Lord initially, would be the material blessings. Then you have a nice house, nice kingdom, nice citizens, everything will be nice. But when Maharaj Gaya, what he did want is any material blessings. I don't want any of this. But what Krishna can do is give us material things that we can use it for spirituality. Because in the material world, everything is material, right? But we can spiritualize it. So when Krishna, so this is probably the main thing for us, our takeaway message. When the Lord gives us blessings, it can be in the form of matter. And matter is there to help us detach from matter. Use material things to get detached from material things. At the same time, the material things has got the power to entangle us, move into the material things. So we have to remind ourselves to detach from the matter by offering those material things back to Krishna. And then Krishna will bless us again with possibly more possessions, then we just keep offering it back to Krishna. So it becomes a cycle of sacrifice. We give it to Krishna, He gives it to us, He empowers us, He enriches us, He makes us possibly wealthy as well, whatever, like Prabhupada, from 20 rupees to billionaire. But Prabhupada gave everything back to Krishna. So he didn't get entangled with any of the material things. Yeah? So we offer our results always back to Krishna. And that is why Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita that everything material that is attractive is what? A spark of my splendor. Everything material that is attractive in the material world is a spark of my splendor. So what Bhakti Yoga does, it transforms that spark into a flame. And that flame is Krishna. In romantic sense, you know, they say, you know, that she is my flame or he is my flame, like that. You know? So Krishna becomes our mirror, he becomes our flame. So the spark of this splendor, anything material that attracts us, if we think of Krishna's presence in our life, then that spark will be transformed into flame. And that flame is Krishna. And when that flame comes in place, then metaphorically speaking, that flame will burn our anarthas and all our worldly desires. Everything material that we hanker for will be diminished into powdered ashes. It will no longer be attractive anymore. Because when we are Krishna, we need nothing more. So to conclude, Krishna is Krishna's blessings. If we have Krishna, we don't need anything more. No other material blessings are required. All we need is Krishna. So Krishna giving himself to us is his biggest blessing. That's why Maharaj Gaya doesn't want anything else at all. He just wants Krishna. That's all he wants. And everything else we don't need to take shape. So with that I'll conclude and I'll give you some rest and conclude. So we talked about two things. That Maharaj Gaya is being sacrificed, and through his sacrifice he's pleasing various personalities. The Brahmana, Kshatriya, Sudras and Vaishyas, then King Indra, and then Lord Vishnu. So in that he is pleasing everybody. Being pleased, the Lord comes, and Indra also comes to bless Maharaj Gaya, but he doesn't want the blessings, the material blessings, but he still gets blessed. So Prabhupada explains in the Purport that there is sacrifice and there is blessings. So we spoke about various lenses of the sacrifice. Yeah, sacrifice can be literal, which is the fire sacrifice. Sacrifice can be metaphorical, which is sacrificing our time, our money, everything else without the flame. So the essence of sacrifice is not just a fire without. It is the fire within, with which we can burn our thirst and come closer to Krishna. And when that happens, then the Lord starts blessing us. So we should count our blessing, but more than that, we should connect to the person who gives us those blessings. And then thereafter, go and distribute the blessings to others, so we can become the medium of blessings. And when we are blessed like that, then Krishna becomes our biggest and the only blessings. Everything else we don't need. And Krishna will give to us whatever we need to be connected to Him always. Yeah? So I stop there. Wishing you are blessed there. If there is any questions or comments or directions, then we will go some time. Yes.
Can you
get
the mic, please?
Oh, there's a mic somewhere.
Thank you for nice class and giving the essence of sacrifice and how it can be done for Krishna. Prabhupada has done the same office. You mentioned that in class, he lived a life of sacrifice and he went away from God and created the whole world by saying the world.
Exactly. Actually, I was going to speak on that, so thanks for reminding me. Because Prabhupada is another person who has lived a life of sacrifice. If you think of there are people who sacrifice their lives as well. Let me go. Well, thank you for reminding me. I think it was a big one. Krishna is my dad. I meant to speak, but then I was watching the time as well. There are people who sacrifice their life sometimes. And generally, let's say the firefighters happens to them. They go and fight the fire. And sometimes, accidentally, they have to die in the process of doing their sacrifice. And when they actually, if they die in the course of doing their duty, they become glorious. They are heroes. People look upon them. And nothing, that's of course glorious, yeah? They sacrifice their life, leaving the family behind, no father in house, no brother, nothing like that. So that's a life of sacrifice. They sacrifice their life. But that's inspiring. But more inspiring and more noble than that is those people who actually live a life of sacrifice. And that comes to your point. When Prabhupada has lived the life of sacrifice, we can connect to him because we have to live. And when we connect to him, a person who is living and giving us examples at every step, we become more inspired. And in Sri Prabhupada's case, of course we know what he sacrificed for us. The entire journey from Jalal, even before Jalal Dutta, almost from prayer, Kamsi, right up to Vrindavan, leaving his body, is all just sacrifices for you and me, nobody else. No, for us, for the entire planet, for the entire universe, he has lived the life of sacrifice, and that's just so inspiring. But what happens, because we want somebody that is living to inspire us, so one has left that legacy with whom others are following that footstep, and we get even equally inspired by them, our spiritual masters, all the sannyasis and all the Prabhupada's first disciples. They are so inspiring, they are also living, they are living what Prabhupada lived, and we get inspired by Prabhupada's life of sacrifice, by the life of sacrifice of our own senior devotees, and it just continues. So sacrificial life, a life of sacrifice is very, very inspiring, and Prabhupada showed that at every single meal. It's very enriching. So thank you for that. Anything else?
In a
line. One more second. Yes. When the mic comes in. Vegetable audience can hear you. Thank you.
Thank you for the actually, I would say, wonderful class. I do appreciate it. Nice.
sequence, the topic, nice presentation, inspiring too. Going a little bit further about the life, living a life of sacrifice, can we understand that by following the instructions of our spiritual master, living our life based on that bani, can be also a life of sacrifice? Because it's our connection to them, and it's the way our philosophy is based on. The relationship with the disciple, Bani and Rapa service, and Bani as a, in one sense more exalted, because that's half of our life. Can you understand?
100%. Because life of sacrifice is doing things for our beloved. One who is dear to us and doing things for them. In the modern times, of course the answer is yes. When we are following the instructions of our spiritual master and living a life according to their instructions, it's a life of sacrifice. And of course, thank God that in Krishna consciousness we know that that sacrifice is enjoyable. It is enjoyable as well. So the sacrifice is to enjoy, okay? Which is something that a layman or material person may not be able to understand. It's like if you tell them, we don't watch movies, no, we don't go to cricket, we don't watch foodie, we don't go to restaurants. It's like, that's so boring. That's what they will think. But what they don't know is, for us, every word is a song and every step is a dance. Come to our temple and then you see a festival and you say, oh my God, never been to a festival like this in my whole life, they will think. So our sacrifice is absolutely, mesmerizingly joyful. Every single step is joyful. Because our whole context is do something for the beloved, and the reciprocation from the beloved in the name of love, and will be happy. Following the instruction of the spiritual master is definitely a sacrifice, but it's very, very enriching and very, very joyful. Modern love, they think, you know, that, you know, we love, when they say we love you, it means what? That I only love you until you give me enjoyment. The moment you stop giving me enjoyment, it's gone. There is no sacrifice. I love you means you are making me happy. That's all. If you stop giving me happiness, then they drop the beloved like a hot potato. It's gone. It just shatters on the ground. It doesn't work. Because if we want to make the other person happy, then that requires sacrifice. Because I want my beloved to be happy. So it must entail sacrifice. I will sacrifice my enjoyment for your enjoyment. That becomes love. Not that you are there for my enjoyment. That is not love. That's love over my experience. Yeah? So in a relationship to last, even on a material platform, husband and wife, son and father, brothers and daughters, for that to life, for that relationship to be solid, there has to be sacrifice. And when we sacrifice, making the other person happy, then that will sustain. Otherwise, it will fall over. And we saw that Bharat sacrificed what he thought was good to what Lord Ram thought was good in the situation. So that's again a sacrifice to the brother, to his dear brother. He sacrificed his own self. Because Bharat has got this, not that he's thinking about it, but if you think of it, what sacrifice is he doing? It's not just literally giving the kingdom to Lord Ram. But for 14 years, he has to live a life of sacrifice, listening to the criticism of the civilians in the society. They may think, hey, look at this guy, no? He has assured the kingship from his dear brother, who was such a nice guy, and now living like a king in the kingdom. He has to tolerate all that for 14 years. That is a difficult sacrifice for him. That is why dying is sometimes easier than living. Because he is not only missing Lord Ram now, he has to deal with all these civilians there, but precisely God knows what they are thinking about him. And he is just saying, sometimes, you know, the mind is more busier when we think what others are thinking of us. Now, what are they thinking of us? It's like, oh my goodness, it's so heavy. What we think of them is easy, because that's in our control. What they think of us is mind-boggling, because if we make an endeavor to go each and every of them to correct them, we say, hey, what do you think of me? Why do you think like this? And of course, we can't go and ask that person what he thinks of us. So we will go and ask another person, what did he say about me? Why do you think he said like that about me? your whole life will go evil, then you will forget Krishna. So, yes, devotees do not have to worry about it, because there is absolutely no chance at all, absolutely no chance at all for us to satisfy everybody. People will think different things about me. I'm sorry to say this, even in devotee community. People will have different opinions on us. Why? Because we ourselves have different opinion on ourselves. Sometimes we think we are devotees, sometimes we think we are demons. So. But, so, if we don't know who we are, what chances are other thinking is a very Parma answer? No chance. They will see the good and they will see the bad. So as devotees, we take the good with the bad and march on. So don't get heavy with what others are thinking of us. The most important thing is to think what is Krishna thinking of us. Because he knows the truth. Only he knows the truth. So if we can resonate with what he is thinking of us, and always do things that is pleasing to him rather than the things that is pleasing to us, then we are in a beautiful situation. Yeah? So thank you for that. One more thing for your question, yeah? We've got time, so I'm not going over time. So please bless me.
Yes. So you were saying in the class, so why do you not want the blessings? So at the beginning of the class, you were saying actually that. So I was trying to think also about reasons why he doesn't want the blessing. It said that sacrifice made in a mode of passion is when you expect something in return. So I was thinking, and if that is not, if it's correct, that he didn't want anything, he wanted to give, not to take. So that was probably another reason why he didn't want the blessing.
Yeah, 100%. In simple terms, he didn't want any blessings that was material. He didn't want any material blessings because he knows he will entangle him. But if it's a spiritual blessing that can come in the form of material possession, then he can utilize that material possession in his spirituality. He was a devotee.